Application Academy is closing if you are applying to medical school in 2024 to start in 2025. We are closing in mid-April, April 12th or 13th, somewhere around there, somewhere in mid-April. We're closing our door. It's time for you to get in to Application Academy to get the support you need to put together your story so that you aren't one of those students that end up rejected because you didn't know how to tell your story. Come join us at applicationacademy.com. Use the promo code podcast for a little extra discount. Use the promo code podcast for a little extra discount. I'll see you soon at applicationacademy.com. The pre-med path can be super confusing. If you'd love some help on your path or on your applications, use the promo code PMY for pre-med years, PMY, over at medicalschoolhq.net and get some help from some of our experts, former directors of admissions, admissions officers, other experts. We have a small team ready to help you today. Again, that's promo code PMY to get a discount on our services at medicalschoolhq.net. I swear to fulfill to the best of my ability and judgment this covenant. I will respect the hard-won scientific gains of those physicians in whose steps I walk and gladly share such knowledge as is mine with those who are to follow. I will apply for the benefit of the sick all measures that are required, avoiding those twin traps of overtreatment and therapeutic nihilism. I will remember that there is art to medicine as well as science, and that warmth, sympathy, and understanding may outweigh the surgeon's knife or the chemist's drug. I will not be ashamed to say I know not, nor will I fail to call in my colleagues when the skills of another are needed for a patient's recovery. I will respect the privacy of my patients, for their problems are not disclosed to me that the world may know. Most especially must I tread with care in matters of life and death. If it is given me to save a life, all thanks. But it may also be within my power to take a life. This awesome responsibility must be faced with great humbleness and awareness of my own frailty. Above all, I must not play at God. I will remember that I do not treat a fever chart, a cancerous growth, but a sick human being whose illness may affect the person's family and economic stability. My responsibility includes these related problems if I am to care adequately for the sick. I will prevent disease whenever I can, for prevention is preferable to cure. I will remember that I remain a member of society with special obligations to all my fellow human beings, those sound of mind and body, as well as the infirm. If I do not violate this oath, may I enjoy life and art, respected while I live and remembered with affection thereafter. May I always act so as to preserve the finest traditions of my calling, and may I long experience the joy of healing those who seek my help. That's the modern version of the Hippocratic Oath that I read every 50 episodes here on the Pre-Med Years podcast. The Pre-Med Year, session number 450. Hello, and welcome to The Pre-Med Years, where we believe that collaboration, not competition, is key to your success. I'm your host, Dr. Ryan Gray, and in this podcast, we share with you stories, encouragement, and information that you need to know to help guide you on your path to becoming a physician. Welcome to The Pre-Med Years. Thank you so much for joining me today. I can't believe we're at 450 episodes. And this week I have a great guest. I have James, who messaged me on Instagram. And after multiple MCATs and multiple application cycles to medical school, he is finally going to medical school with multiple acceptances this last cycle. You're going to learn a ton about James and why he has persevered so long and so hard to get to this point in his life. These are the episodes that you all love, so I hope you enjoy this conversation with James. Before we jump in, I want to talk about the MCAT Minute, because as James mentions, you got to take the MCAT. He took the MCAT many, many times. You can only take it 7 times. But one of the questions is, like, what score do I need? What score did James need? And that answer is different for everyone. Unfortunately, I was talking to a student the other day who had a 513 and was wanting to retake her MCAT. And all of us, we were doing an Ask the Dean Live, which is a perk for our MAPT members. We're doing Ask the Dean, and the student's like, I got a 513, I want to retake it. And all 4 of us, all the advisors on MAPT, were like, no, don't retake a 513. There's diminishing return on investment with that 515, or 513 rather. So can you get in with a 505? You can. Can you get in with a 500? You can. I've seen students get in with 496s. If you go and look at the AAMC chart, students get in with lower scores. Now, it's not probable, but it happens. And you have to remember the MCAT is just one part of your application. You need to make sure that you have as high of a score as possible for you. You will never feel ready to take the MCAT, but at some point you have to pull the trigger and trust that the prep that you are doing, hopefully with Blueprint MCAT, is getting you where you need to go. So that's the MCAT Minute brought to you by Blueprint MCAT. Go check them out at blueprintmcat.com. Let's go ahead and say hello to James. James, welcome to the pre-med years. Thanks for joining me.
Hey, how are you doing?
I am good. I'm excited to have you because I've been getting a lot of feedback. Students are antsy. They want to hear some more success stories of people who have gotten into medical school. Now, your story is going to be a little bit boring because it was straightforward, right? I want to be a doctor. I'm going to go through undergrad, get into medical school, piece of cake, right? That's easy. End of story.
I'm sure from my pocket and my time, that would have been great, but that was not the case at all.
Not the case at all. Let's start with, when did you realize you wanted to be a doctor?
And that's kind of hard. So it was somewhere between, I took a trip to Nigeria around kindergarten. So I think looking back in retrospect, that was the first time that I really realized that I wanted to become a physician, and how that happened was rather interesting. So I went back home in the area. I'm Nigerian. And so I went back to my parents' home country of Nigeria, and I was in the village. And so the village is something similar to like the underserved or the inner city areas here within the States. And so I noticed, like, when I was in the village, it was large gaps between like clinics, and where if individuals have to go get care, they'll have to like drive into the city an hour and 2 hours away. When I was younger, I didn't really notice anything. But when I got back to the States, and like I said, looking at those inner city areas, or the hood, if you will, you would see that here as well in the US. I was like, wow, like that's not right. Like something like stirred in me. I was like, hey man, if I can be a change agent to that, that'd be cool. So that's when I believe it first started. And then like kind of fast forwarding to middle school, I was really good at sciences. And I remember particularly one time I did really well on an exam, and my teacher was like, okay, like go do a reteach of class. And for me, it just happened naturally. Everything made sense. I enjoyed it. I was like, I really love science, and I have like a heart for wanting to help with healthcare disparities. Maybe, you know, being a physician is right up my alley.
Nice. Now, as a Black man, I hear from a lot of underrepresented students who come to medicine at a much later time in their life because they grew up not seeing people who look like them, who talk like them, who came from the same inner cities as them, being in those positions, being a physician, being whatever it is that person is chasing after. Obviously, in our case, we're talking about medicine and going to medical school. Did you ever have thoughts of like, well, my doctor's not Black, or I don't see many Black doctors, and so I don't know if that's really a thing for me? Because that's a fear or this self-doubt that a lot of people have. Did you deal with that at all?
You hit the nail on the head. So for a long time, I knew I wanted to be a physician. I talked about kindergarten, middle school, but I had no direct model. Nobody in my family is a physician. None of my uncles, none of my aunts. I don't believe I saw my first African-American physician until I got into college. Yeah. And so by that time, it's not too late, but it definitely would have behooved me if I had like a mentor, somebody to guide me along, you know, my pre-med journey. And so I didn't have anybody within my immediate family or my immediate community that I can look at, like, okay, I see this person doing a position. Let me go talk to them. Like, what path should I take? So that definitely had a large impact on my projectile and even getting into medicine at this stage within my life.
Yeah. As you were going through this process, you get into undergrad and you're on your journey. How did you figure out the things that you needed to do to get into medical school without that mentorship there?
Honestly, it was trial and error. It was really trial and error. Even looking at my major, I know talking to my dad was essentially my college advisor. Like I had one in high school, but that wasn't the best. Even my institutional advisor at the time for pre-med wasn't the best. And so my dad was like when I majored in biology originally at my first institution, and I just did that just because it was science. I liked biology, but in retrospect, I probably would have done something else because I still would have had to take the pre-medical prerequisites and I could have majored in something that, you know, I liked a lot more, loved a lot more, if you will, from a major perspective.
What did you major in?
I majored in biology originally.
Okay.
So I originally went to a University of Houston for undergrad, my first institution, and I majored in biology and minored in health education. But when I transferred to Texas Southern University, a historically black college and university, literally down the street, I was in a scholarship program called HLSAM, Lewis Stokes Alliance for Minority Participation, the same exact scholarship at Texas Southern, but they didn't allow biology majors because they wanted like PhDs or hardcore scientists. So I had to switch to a major that I actually was not strong at, which was chemistry.
Interesting.
And so I switched to chemistry just to keep my scholarship. And then I minored in biology and health education. I double minored.
Okay. So let's talk about the path for you. Because when I was reading your story a little bit, I kind of felt like LeBron James. Not one, not two,
right.
Not three. All right. Talking about how many championships he's going to win with the Heat and his buddies down there. Uh-huh. How many times did you apply to medical school?
You know, it's funny. I almost lost count. That's how, like, I'm not even kidding. I believe it was four times, if I'm not mistaken. I applied to medical school four times.
Yeah.
And the very first time, speaking back to earlier, so I went to University of Houston for 3 years. I split my time between University of Houston and Texas Southern. So my undergraduate alma mater at Texas Southern, I spent 3 years there. So a total of 6 years for undergrad at two institutions, switching majors. And the very first time I took the MCAT was in 2015, the new MCAT. And so I took that in 2015. You asked me about how many times. So I applied four times, I'm sorry. And that the very first time was in 2015. And I applied almost like every year after that, taking like some gaps in between up until this current cycle.
Why didn't you give up?
That is a great question. Why did I not give up? I believe I didn't give up because I knew my why. It's really funny on this other side, talking to my friends who are lawyers, talking to my friends who are attendings now. And they honestly was like, man, I would have gave up. Like, I don't see how you continued along this path. Because I started undergrad in 2009, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. And so like looking at a traditional projectile from 2009 to 2013, you know, I should have graduated, should have matriculated into medical school. And we're looking at 2021 now. So all that time up until now, my dream has been linear, didn't deviate. And I believe why I didn't give up because I knew why I wanted to come into medicine. And why I wanted to come into medicine, really, it sounds very cliche, you know, or, you know, run of the mill, but I really have a heart of service. Speaking back to like knowing what my community looks like and the disparities within my community and knowing the impact as a black man, what I can make within our community. Looking at the AAMC, they put out a report, I believe, was a couple years ago, looking at from 1974 up until 2014 and showing the dearth or disparities of African-American men in medicine.
Yeah.
And knowing that, hey, I am that person, I can be the change I want to see. That's what kept me going. Like my background that I haven't really talked about outside of medicine is a teacher. I've just completed my third year of teaching. And so each and every day I'm seeing models or I'm seeing different individuals that want to do either what I want to do or even if it's outside of medicine. But I'm a direct impact and change within doing that. And that's I marry that to medicine as well. Each and every time that I'll be going into my patient's room, they're seeing a direct model that is changing the narrative. Because if you look at the media, you look at an African-American man, what are they? An athlete, you know, a rapper, or they're in jail. Yeah. Those are the things that are highlighted within media. And I wanted to change that narrative. And I knew day by day whether each MCAT retake, each exam I went into, each institution I went to, each degree I got, it's like my linear goal is to impact and change medicine for my people and for everyone at large, but particularly people that look like me.
I get harassed online by people who tell me that I shouldn't be telling people that if they want this, they can do it, that anyone can get into medical school, that people shouldn't have plan Bs.
Yeah.
And you are the epitome of why I say what I say, because you are out there now starting your dream of going to medical school, even when probably many people in your life told you what you're doing is crazy. Why are you continuing to try to do this? Obviously, you haven't gotten in the first time, the second time, the third time. What's the point? Outside of the reason, the why, which is super important, what gave you the confidence that you could?
That's good. What gave me the confidence that I could? I believe getting little, as I'm a man of faith, I'm a believer, I'm a Christian. And so I believe God gave me like little crumbs along the way that told me like, okay, my family nickname is JJ. Like, okay, JJ, don't give up. The first being, so I completed, after I finished my undergraduate degree at Texas Southern in 2015, I went and got certified as a teacher. So I taught my first year from 2015 to 2016. After 2016, I started my 2 years master's at Hampton University. So I was able to gain my master's in medical science. And so as time would go on, I got a good bearing on my studying skills. So like the academic bookwork really wasn't the issue. As I spoke about with, or I haven't spoke about yet, but I actually took the MCAT 5 times. And so my Achilles heel within this whole entire application process has been the MCAT. And so within 2018, finishing off my master's, you know, I did well on that. This was around the time that I took my MCAT for the second or third time. And so I know within the 2018 application cycle, I took it for the second time, got a abysmal score, and took it at the beginning of the summer and took it again at the end of the summer. When, I mean, for pre-meds listening, do not do that unless you were scoring like 528 on your practice exam and you go into an exam and it was just a fluke, which was not the case for me. Yeah. My practice exams were looking exactly like the score that I got both of the times that I took it within the summer. Yeah. But taking it after that third time, I was distraught. I'm like, what the heck is going on? Like, I did well once I transferred to Texas Southern. I did well academically. I just completed a graduate degree and I did well. But this MCAT, I just can't shake it. And your question, outside of my why, what kept me going was that mentorship. Around that time, it's an organization called Tour for Diversity. And what it pretty much is a mobile medical school fair. And I met a gentleman there named Dr. Tyree Winters. Yeah. And so I'm also a member of Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated, the first and oldest African-American Greek-letter organization that's devoted to community service, devoted to academics, and just impacting our community in a positive way. And so he happened to be my frat brother as well. So like a lot throughout that time that I met him, he's kind of been like mentoring me here and there. I told him about my MCAT. And he was just like so at ease. And I'm like, why are you like so calm and cool? He's like, hey, don't worry about it. You know, I did this this program at my alma mater. And that's actually like how I got into medical school. I'm like, that's cool. You know, it was on the Midwest and I'm from Texas. So I was like, you know, there's no way I'm going to get into there. I know that they prefer people from their state. It's like, James, don't worry about it. Apply. And, you know, we'll be good. And so lo and behold, I applied. And like that was my, I guess, first crumb or glimpse into to medicine, because the way the program was set up, you automatically get a medical school interview at the end of the program. And so it was awesome. So I did like a 5 weeks boot camp that mirrored the institution's curriculum. And then afterwards, I had my first medical school interview. And so like that's a great feeling. Finally, like, you know, I've been applying so many times, I finally get an interview.
Yeah.
So that was like the first, I guess, you know, little crumb that God brought in my in front of me. It was like, okay, James, keep going. You're getting close.
Yeah. It's like a slot machine, right? It's the variable ratio reward system of psychology, right? Of like, you're ready to give up. You don't want to pull that slot anymore. And then you hit a couple dollars and you're like, maybe I can get the jackpot. So you play some more, you don't get anything. It gives you a little bit more. So it sounds like that variable reward system worked for you as well. That's awesome. So talk about, you mentioned doing well kind of academically. What do you remember what you graduated with GPA wise from your undergraduate institution?
Yeah, for sure. And I'll break that down. So since I went to two institutions, my GPA was actually essentially average. And so while I did, as far as like on MCAS and different respective medical services, because while I was at Texas Southern, I essentially got dean's list every semester, but my overall GPA didn't look like that. But I believe I finished with Texas Southern University at 3.25. Okay. That's what I finished off with Texas Southern University. And my graduate GPA was around a 3.6.
Okay.
Yeah. And I finished. So that's what I finished off GPA wise with those respective institutions.
What led you to do a post-bac on top of the master's degree?
I'm glad you mentioned that. I didn't even talk about that yet. So I did the master's degree at Hampton University 2018. That was the third time I took my MCAT. And so I actually went through an interesting situation with the summer program that I did in the Midwest. And I went through an interesting situation with there, and I ended up not matriculating there. I believe they wanted me to actually do a post-bac at their program. And for me, I felt like I was ready to start now. And I didn't want to do another post-bac on top of doing a master's at that time. So for me, I'm like, hey, you know, fourth time's a charm, you know? So let me retake this MCAT. And I retook the MCAT and jumped up 6 points. Right. And so something that I guess course correction in retrospect, like I jumped up 6 points, is good, great. But the timing that I took my MCAT and the timing that I applied did not work in my favor. So I applied with that 6 point increase. And mind you, my MCAT was already very low. And I'll be transparent with my score. So in my second and third time that I took the MCAT, I scored a 48 twice. The very first time I took my MCAT, I got a 42. So I started off with a 42, took it second and third time, got the same exact score during the same cycle, got a 48. I jumped up to a 494. Which is still not a stellar score by no means, but it's something.
it is something. So yes.
Yeah. It's something. And I applied with that and actually got an interview. So I got an interview with that 494. It was at a DO program in on the East Coast. But it was so unbeknownst to me, it was a couple of things that happened during that cycle. My application was delayed for a month. For I believe it was something as trivial as forgetting to check my residency. And so a month is an eternity in enrolling admissions. Yep. So I interviewed, but I interviewed on the very last day. And unbeknownst to me, I was just interviewing for a waitlist spot.
Yep.
And so I interviewed well, but got waitlisted. And I had another opportunity as well. So as I was applying, knowing that, hey, I might not get in, I was applying for post-bac. I'm like, hey, I need something. Like I said, I need some type of forward projectile motion. That's kind of how I looked at it. It's like, in my mind, like, I'm going to be a doctor. So I need to do something that's going to help me become a doctor. But honestly, now that I think about it more, that really wasn't the thing. I knew what my Achilles heel was, the MCAT. Yep. And so with the program, I had to think about, okay, I can stay back home and teach for another year and study for the MCAT, or I can put myself in a position where I'm in an environment with other pre-meds that are working towards the same goal, and which one would help me score better on the MCAT. And for me, I felt that it would be doing the post-bac. And another thing tied with the post-bac was that I was conditionally accepted to that institution. So that was the two things that led me to doing the post-bac. Like, hey, I'm already conditionally accepted. I know what target score I have to get to acquire. So it's like, it's easier, because even I watch your podcast all the time. You'll have students that have 90th percentile scores, will have multiple interviews, but not an acceptance. Yeah. And so I already have outlined three aspects that I have to satisfy to where I would matriculate. And like for me, it was a 3.0 GPA, which I was able to exceed. A 501 MCAT, which is the 50th percentile. I'm not sure if that's still now, but I know last year that was 50th percentile. And then they had a pre-matriculation program, which is like another boot camp before my intended M1 year. It was pass fail, so 70th percentile, and I exceeded that.
Yeah.
But going back to this good old MCAT.
The MCAT. Yeah. Talk about it.
And so, okay, yeah, for sure. And so this was my fifth time. I said my first score was a 482. My second third score was a 48. My fourth score was a 494, and then my fifth score. And so I like to even talk about what went on around that time, too. And so my intended time to take my fifth MCAT was around May. And so with this respective post-bac program that I did, the way the program was set up was I'll do my post-bac coursework for about a year. So ended April. I have about a month of dedicated MCAT studying time, and then I would take the MCAT. But around May of 2020, I'm sure a lot of us know
what happened. I don't know.
What happened, you know, something we're still in. We're in a better state, quote unquote. But that was essentially like the height of the pandemic.
Yeah.
And so like leading up to my MCAT, I saw the test days getting canceled. And I knew my test day was going to get canceled, but it's like nothing I can do about it.
Yep.
So my May date got canceled. I was put in a position where I was studying for an exam I didn't even know if I'll be able to take. That was contingent upon me getting into medical school.
Yeah.
And so it was a very like tumultuous time for me, especially with the way that COVID impacted the scheduling. So I was put in a position to where I was doing my post-bac coursework, studying for my MCAT, and doing medical school curriculum all concurrently, which was not originally how the program was set up, even to the extent of 2 days before I took a medical level histology exam. And so in short or in summary, I was 3 points away from that 501 and got a 498.
But you went from a 482. 482 to a 488 to a 494 to a 498. What do you attribute that continuous improvement to?
That's a good question. I think me just trying to switch it up. I believe the adage is, you know, if you do the same thing over and over again and expect to get different results, it's insanity. Yeah. And so like each and every time I study for the MCAT, I tried something different, try something new. If I use Princeton last time, I'm going to do Kaplan. If I use Blueprint, I'm going to use Khan Academy, you know, if I didn't focus enough on the double AMC materials, I implemented that earlier on into my study schedule. If I didn't have a study schedule before, I actually created a study schedule. If I didn't study with a study partner, I made sure I studied with a study partner. If I studied with too many, I made sure that I, you know, decreased it. And so each and every time I took the MCAT, I varied how I studied. And I assessed how I studied too, like what did help me? Like if I, you know, saw my CAR score wasn't where I wanted it to be, I'm like, okay, what could I have done better that I didn't do? And then ask other people that I knew were successful on the CAR section. And I'm just using that as an example. Like, what did you do? What helped you perform successfully on the CARs? And then I'll implement that to the best of my ability. So I believe like changing up how I studied was definitely very helpful. And for the last time I took the MCAT, what I alluded to earlier, putting myself in a space with other people that had that linear or singular goal, I believe it really helped me. It's like iron sharpened iron.
Yeah. So many students in your situation will, I've seen historically, do worse on the MCAT because there's so much pressure on you to do well this quote unquote last time, because you're sitting there with everything lined up, right? Get the 3.0, you're good there. Get the minimum MCAT score, you're good there. Do X, Y, Z, and you're good. And for you, it seemed like every time it was the MCAT that seemed to be the biggest barrier. And students in that situation will continually get to the situation where they'll go in for the MCAT, but they put so much pressure on themselves that they fail because of that pressure they're putting on themselves. Mm-hmm. How did you deal with that pressure?
That's a great question. And that's very true. Like I recently like acquired a mentor or a mentee rather that's going through that same situation. Like he's taking the same, the last time I took the MCAT, I did Princeton Review, and this is not like marketing for them or anything like that. I'm just telling my story. It is a great program, but I'm not marketing for them or anything like that. And I know you even have a great program as well, correct?
I don't have MCAT stuff. I hate the MCAT.
Okay, for sure. Cool. All right, for sure. But yeah, so I did Princeton Review last time, and then my mentee is taking the Princeton Review as well. And so I know Princeton Review starts you off with that baseline MCAT that you take.
Yep.
And so I asked him, like, okay, like, what was, you know, your baseline score, the first one you took? And his baseline was higher than what I landed. I'm like, yeah, my friend, you're, and he's been increasing since then. Yep. I'm like, you'll be all right. Like the goal of the MCAT, like some people want to get a perfect score. Hey, I mean, you should study like you want to get a perfect score, but I believe the goal of the MCAT is to get a score that gets you into medical school, whatever score that is. And so like, if you're increasing, and then that's one piece of the pie. You know, I'm sitting here in front of you today, you know, interviewing with a less than average MCAT score. And I'm in a good position. I'm in a great position.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry, but going back to your question, I'm sorry. So can you repeat the question again?
I have no idea what my question is. I wanna go back to, students are listening to this going, okay, you needed a 3.0, you got that. You needed a 501, you didn't get that. Mm-hmm. And how did you get into medical school?
Oh, okay, for sure. Yeah. And then the other metric was the boot camp as well, or the pre-matriculation program. And I exceeded that. So how I got into medical school, and first I want to talk about, because I want to harp on, I was really at my lowest moment this last year.
Yeah.
And I think that's important because I don't want to gloss over like any of my shortcomings or gloss over like any of the times where like I dealt with like just really being at a low moment. Imagine taking the MCAT 5 times. Imagine doing a master's, imagine doing a post-bac. Imagine taking, well, I took longer than 3 gap years, but spending 3 years teaching on top of all of that too. And so I'm so far removed from when I started on my journey in 2009. And so like this last blow, I was just like, man, I feel like it really took everything out of me. And it was really just by the grace of God, having a strong support system within my family and my mentors that saw even what I didn't even see in myself sometimes. It was like, nah, James, you're going to be a doctor. Like just give it one more time. And so what I did was I took that. As I said before, even back in 2018, when I did the summer boot camp, I felt like I was ready for medical school, me personally. And so like coming, having to do all these things on top of it to prove, I guess, prove myself or prove myself to whoever that I belong there, it gave me a chip on my shoulder. Like, I don't know if I have any sports fans that are listening, but like Kobe Bryant, God rest his soul, talks about Mamba mentality. And that's what I took upon. I pretty much, and I listened to another person named Eric Thomas. He talks about going 120. That means like going over above 100%. And so I flipped the switch and went 120. And so each and every single administrator or a dean that I've built a relationship with before, I emailed them out. I had a nice little blurb that I put out like, hey, this is my background. This is what I've done. And the negative part about COVID was that I didn't get into medical school last year. The positive part of COVID that it made the admissions director so amenable to having virtual conversations like this.
Yeah.
And so I just sent out cold emails like, hey, this is my background. This is my story. Would you mind setting up, you know, a meeting with me so I can, you know, tell you more about my story and situation? And a good amount and percentage of them said, yeah, let's do it. And so when I went out there, I was just very candid and open, similar to now, like, hey, these are my scores. Because I felt like my background and my application, quote unquote, was a Harvard application. My Achilles heel was my MCAT. And so I was just like, let's just get the elephant out the room now. Like, these are my scores. Like, you know, is this something that we can work with or that your institution will work with? Some said yes, some said no. And I utilized that to curate my list of schools that I applied to. And the good thing, yeah, I think you were about to ask a question.
I just wanted to know, because a lot, I talk about advocating for yourself all the time and reaching out to schools, and many schools don't care and they'll just ignore you. Were you reaching out to like the deans and directors of admissions? Were you reaching out to the diversity and inclusion or diversity and equity offices? Who are you reaching out to get these conversations?
All of the above. Yeah. Like I said, I this cycle I went for broke. And so like something that helped me along the way, too, that I remember you asked the earlier question, like what kept me going? So I've been very involved with the Student National Medical Association, on the local level, on the regional level, on the national level. My very first time going to our national conference, the American Medical Education Conference, was in 2015. I actually had the privilege of charting my chapter of Minority Association of Pre-Medical Students, which is the undergraduate version of SNMA at Texas Southern University.
Nice.
So getting exposure to minority student doctors and physicians really changed the game for me. And so like going through those annual conferences, going to those regional conferences, I built relationships with different admissions directors. Mm-hmm. And going back to my Achilles heel, I just never had the stats. So now that I had, you know, some shoot or something close to whatever stats I needed, I'm like, okay, I'm in the best position I've ever had, whether it's good or not. Like my 498 to me was my 528. So I'm like, hey, like this is what I'm going to go with. And so I went in confidently, knowing that, I went with the mindset, like, this is my last chance. This is the last time I'm going to apply. I'm not going to take this MCAT again. Like, this is it. And so your question was, did I reach out to the deans of admission? I did. Did I reach out to the diversity, equity, and inclusion officers? I did. Did I reach out to medical students? I did. I reached out to any and everyone that I felt would help me along towards getting into medical school.
Yeah.
They just really just want to hear my story and like, you know, culminate that. So I reached out to every and anybody.
Yeah.
And I attended every virtual, well, not every, but I attended the most virtual conferences and meetings as I could.
Nice. Advocating for yourself. I talk about it all the time and what you did, not just last minute sending emails, but everything up until that point, getting involved in different organizations, going to national conferences, regional conferences, virtual conferences, going to as many places as possible and putting yourself in front of as many people as possible just is the perfect situation to put yourself in so that you could advocate for yourself and potentially some of those people recognized you or remembered your name or whatever it is. And you're not just some random person emailing at the 23rd hour because you haven't gotten into medical school yet and you're desperate. So it's the perfect situation you put yourself in. And what was it like? So you've been through 4 applications, 5 MCATs. What was it like to going through this last cycle? How many interviews did you end up getting?
I ended up getting 7 medical school interviews.
7 medical school interviews. What was it like? Like those interviews coming in going, hey, we want to talk to you. Hey, we want to talk to you. Like, is this for me? Like, because it seems like it probably didn't happen in the previous ones. There was maybe an interview here, there, wherever.
Sure. That's an awesome question. Honestly, as confident as I sound now, and as you know, as much as I you know hyped up my quote unquote Harvard application, it still was surreal. Yeah. It was very surreal, because like that was just my mentality going in. But without the practicality or without it materializing, it's just a mentality. And so like seeing it actually you know come into fruition and the interviews roll in, I was ecstatic. I know it was one medical student that I spoke with, and I was getting advice on like how to interview and you know how to prep. And he was like, man, this is the easiest part. This is the one interview where you know you're a expert on it. You know yourself. You are a expert on yourself. And so it's just like, man, this is the easy part. Like, this is like the victory lap for you. And so he's just like, really just enjoy it. Like, don't get in your head too much. Don't overthink it. Obviously, like, read over your application. You know, look at some interview questions. Do mock interviews. But more so anything, just enjoy it. Like, really just enjoy the process. And at the same time, keep in mind that they're interviewing you, but you're interviewing them. And so keep in mind, like really pay attention to what's going on. Make sure that, you know, whether it's from the, I mean, it's different since I interview virtually, but if I was face to face, like, you know, don't discount the janitor. Don't discount anybody like at the institution, you know, treat everybody with the highest respect and highest regard. And so it was surreal. Like I said, like from my first interview to the last interview, it was very surreal. I enjoyed each and every moment of it.
Yeah. What was it like to finally get that acceptance?
What I literally did when I got my acceptance, I ran around my neighborhood. I ran around my neighborhood yelling. My dad goes for a walk and he had left like maybe 5 or 10 minutes before I got the call. And I ran and found him. And like, yeah, I hugged him. Like we were overjoyed. And I got the interview rather. So a funny story. So the day I interviewed, this is a very interesting story. The day I interviewed, the dean of diversity and inclusion actually called me the same day and told me I got in.
Wow.
I was like, what? And then following up, the dean of the medical school called me and doubled down. It was like, hey, James, you know, I'm not sure if anybody's reached out to you yet, but I just want to let you know we're just so happy to welcome you to the class of 2025. I felt like a D1 athlete or something like that.
Show me the money.
right. So it was awesome. Like at that time in the cycle, I was like, hey, however this cycle pans out, I know I'm starting in the fall. And it was just a wonderful feeling. It just proved to me and showed me like, hey, and you say this all the time, like if you're meant to be a doctor, you're going to be a doctor. And so it's just a matter of whether you're going to keep working at it or you're just going to give up after, you know, that first failed MCAT attempt or that first, you know, C or D in your course, if you're going to allow that to deter you. It's just a matter of that.
Yeah. Did you end up with any more acceptances?
I did. So my split. So I had 7 interviews. Yeah. I ended up getting waitlisted. Only got denied from one school.
Okay.
So I had 7 interviews, got denied from one school, waitlisted at 3 programs and accepted at 3 programs.
Accepted at 3 programs. 4 application cycles, rejection after rejection after rejection. And finally, 3 acceptances. When it rains, it pours. You're like,
yeah.
I only need one. Like, where were you yeah. when I needed you 3 years ago? What, like at this point, you're in, you know where you're going. You're going to be a medical student. You're going to be a doctor. All of the time, money, effort put in over the years, it has finally paid off so that you can start your medical school journey now coming up here soon. What goes through your mind when you wake up in the morning?
I'm like excited. Like I literally moved to where I'm going next month and my program starts up on the 12th and I'm kind of like antsy, honestly. I'm like, hey, I'm like ready to get started. I'm in a good way. So I'm like, I'm really ready to get started on this next part of my journey. All the other stuff we talked about was the part of my journey just trying to get in. And now I'm finally in. I know I have 4 years of medical school ahead of me and anywhere from like 3 years to 8 years of residency training. But I mean, I take it one day at a time. Like I don't think about that too much.
Yeah.
And I'm excited. I think for me, it's just really getting my mind right. Like to start. And I know like another, I talked about the MCAT being my Achilles heel, like from self-assessment, what I realized, starting off in undergrad, I was very involved in high school and I was in college too. But it looked different at different stages. Mm. Early on, I was pretty much like the president on the e-board for every organization. I was essentially like Mr., you know, University of the respective institution. And I realized like, hey, that didn't work out well with my academics. That wasn't a good pairing. And so I realized I was a jack of all trades, a master of none. So when I transferred to Texas Southern, I was like, hey, I have to keep the main focus, the main focus. My number one job is to be a student. And once I get that, you know, once I get that down, like, you know, I can add something else on. You know, it's better to do two or three things really well than to do like a billion things, you know, subpar. And so I realized that, and I was able to mature into that and just better manage my time. And so when I say my mentality, I want to translate that into medical school and to ensure like, while I'm gifted with so much, while I have a lot of talents, while I have a lot of interest, not to get bogged down or overburdened by that, and allow that to be to the detriment of my academics as I did earlier on in my career.
You mentioned several times now the MCAT is your Achilles heel, and I have the 2020 facts table from the AAMC pulled up, and the categorization they have is Black or African American students on average score 498.3, white students 507.7. Right, 9-point difference there, roughly, if I know my math or something like that. For the MCAT score, I am a huge proponent of getting rid of the MCAT or figuring out something else where we don't see huge differences between different ethnicities, different races, different skin colors, whatever. Having gone through this journey, taking the MCAT five times, if you were to put a word out to the AAMC to tell them about what you think of the MCAT, what would you say?
With all due respect, do away with this useless exam. With all due respect, do away with this useless exam respectfully.
Yeah.
Respectfully. As you said, the stats, the numbers don't lie. Yeah. My MCAT instructor, a white gentleman, said this exam is not an indication of your aptitude or anything like that. This is an exam that's standing between you and getting into medical school.
Yeah.
So what that's telling you, this is not an exam that is really testing anything. This is just a gatekeeper exam. It keeps people out. That's what this exam does. And then the people that we're speaking of is, as you said in the stats, when you look at this standardized exam, historically, whether it's the MCAT, the LSAT, SAT, anything of that nature, honestly, when you look at it, you have you know, a certain sect on the majority, oftentimes, and I'm not speaking umbrella, but oftentimes what happens is they're exposed to this type of tutelage or learning or having tutors for the standardized exam. So they know how to take the test.
Yeah.
It's about taking a test, not your aptitude or showing whether or not you can get into a respective professional school. And so if you give somebody exposure to something at a very young age, you give another sect of people, you know, the minority, and they don't get this exposure. And over time, they're standardized tests, standardized tests, standardized tests. And this is a barrier in order to get to the next level of professional school. What do you think will continue to happen? You know, that minorities that's not exposed early on, you're going to see that large disparity, which we're seeing now.
Yeah.
I believe COVID pretty much exacerbated that. And you saw that to where like a lot of institutions where you're looking at MBA school or law school or business school, rather, like they allowed you not to take that exam. You know, the institutions that were, you know, really hip or conscious or really honed in on what was going on and how much of an impediment this these standardized exams are for Black or brown individuals.
Yeah. Yeah. The problem with our system is that the same company, and I'll call it a company, the same company that is the organization for medical schools, the same company that does the admissions for the far majority of medical schools is the same company that administers the tests for those schools. And so there's this perverted feedback for schools to use the MCAT. And there were a few schools that accepted some students without an MCAT, but nowhere near what we saw, as you mentioned, with other professional schools dropping requirements for GRE and other tests.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. It's a business, unfortunately. It's, you know, capitalism. But by and large, if I had the power, if I had the autonomy, then we'll be out of there.
Exam is out. Yes. Well, awesome, James. For everyone coming up, following in your footsteps, your message is out there that even after five MCAT exams, four application cycles. You're starting on your journey to be a physician. What kind of final words of wisdom do you have for those students out there who are doubting themselves, wanting to give up?
Mm, that's great. I'll just leave you similar to what you say, and I see you echo on your podcast. If you're meant to be a physician, you're going to be a physician. It's a matter of whether, because you spoke about earlier, like there were some people that told me like, go get a PhD. You're great at teaching, and nothing against PhD. Like yep. PhD is awesome, but I know that wasn't my path or my calling. And so like, hey, go get a PhD, you know, go do this, go do that. Never let anybody deter you for your dream when they didn't give it to you.
All right, there you have it. That's James for you. Hopefully that gave you some inspiration. You can follow him and go say hello to him. He's JDOTOKK. Again, that's JDOTOKK on Instagram. Go check him out. Tell him you heard him here on the podcast. Hope you have a great week. We'll see you next time here on the Pre-Med Years.
This is MedEd Media.